Well, good morning, fellow space travelers. You know, we really are space travelers. We don't sit still. We're moving. I never have understood why we don't just kind of fall off, because we're really standing on the side of planet Earth. But it feels like we're standing vertical, but we're not. You know, that's one of the benefits of gravity, I'm told. Who knows? Understand that we may be facing obliteration in the not-too-distant future. Well, when I read the article in the news, and this is when news does it, I think the article said Earth could face devastating asteroid impact. Okay, so we've been told that, and we know that that's a possibility. Well, they were acting like this one that's coming, that I think it's about the size of a football field, that one is going to hit us. Well, not quite. It's going to be 2.5 million miles away. So why did they even bother to say it that way? Because sensationalism sells, right? That's what they like to do to us. They like to twist us and turn us into knots, even when what they're saying is just a figment of their imagination. Well, this isn't a figment of my imagination. You know, I had faith in millennials. If you're a millennial, doesn't that make you feel good that Lenny Lawson had faith in you? Probably not, since you probably don't even know me. But that's okay. I am a baby. I'm pretty much at the tail end of the baby boomer generation. I was born in 1956, so I'm kind of there towards the end. I think maybe 59 was the deadline to be called a baby boomer. My dad was in World War II. He said the Japanese surrendered because they heard he was coming, but I don't think that's true. But that's what he said, and he's my dad. So maybe it was true. I don't know. But anyway, millennials is that generation that pretty much all the baby boomers said, they're going to destroy us. Those were our kids. But I don't think they are, because, you know, it's traditional for each generation to eventually overtake the previous one. And apparently the millennials just have. Millennials are born between 1977 and 1994. And they have actually taken over as the largest generation of what? New car buyers in the United States. So we have to be nice to you guys out there, you young folk. Demographic information moves very slowly, but last year millennials took over in April during the peak of the coronavirus pandemic. We thought it was kind of a blip, but it's only increased since then, says somebody that works at CNBC, or somebody CNBC was interviewing. Most impactful for the current U.S. market is that millennials, for the first time this year, will be the largest buyers of mid-size and full-size heavy-duty pickup trucks. These segments are known as light-duty trucks. They represent about 2.85 million of the sales, or 20% of the U.S. new vehicle market. So it's a really important market, you know, for car and truck buyers. Obviously, I thought most millennials, though, were eschewing the big heavy-duty stuff with diesel engines and big engines and SUVs and stuff like that, but no. No, they're just like us. They have seen the light. Baby boomers, yeah, okay, here it is. Baby boomers were born between 1946 and 1964. And then Generation X, those are the ones that were right behind us. We're born in 65 through 76. They're really messed up people. No, I'm just kidding. They're not. But it is kind of a coming of age story for millennials. They're maturing. They're getting promoted in their jobs. And, you know, they don't want to just drive Hondas and Corollas and Volkswagen Golfs. You know, they want to drive big boy cars, you know, and trucks especially, like F-150s and Silverados and Ram trucks. Interesting, they say that while the average buyer age for the Mustang Mach-E, which is the electric Mustang thing, which is selling really well, they're mostly Gen Xers at the age of 50, according to J.D. Power. But millennials are also a very large buying group of EVs. Power reports that they represented about 35% of new EV purchases. That's electric vehicle for you folks who don't know what I'm talking about. But they 35% of new EV purchases were done by those millennials. And the baby boomers are about 29%, and Gen X is about 26%. So I know I was reading an article about that Ford is said that they can actually build, by 2023, they will actually be able to build 600,000 EVs. And that's made up of the Mach-E, the Lightning, the Ford F-150, which is going to be called Lightning because it's all electric, and whatever else they decide to come out with between now and then that's going to be electric. I would assume that the new Ranger, the all-new Ranger that they've already introduced in Australia, it's kind of a world truck, the Ranger. They've been building it for a long time. The one that we got in the United States was really about 8 years old as far as design and everything. So we were late to the game with that, but the all-new Ranger will be here, and I'd say that they'll have an electric version of that. They'll have an electric version of the next generation Explorer, I'm sure. We'll probably see some more hybrids. And there will still be gas engines, folks. Don't panic. I think that we're still going to use the internal combustion engine for a long time to come. Because the market is, we may be talking hundreds of thousands of cars being EVs, but more than likely, within a few years, if the market keeps going like it is right now, we'll be hitting 20 million new vehicle sales. So it's still going to be a small portion of the overall vehicle market, but they is coming. And the important thing, I think, is going to be, in order for there to be EV acceptance, is going to be how long does it take to charge it, and how accessible is it going to be to have a charger? Needless to say, if you could go up to Roadrunner Market and pull in and plug in, and then 5 to 10 minutes later you're full of electrons and can go another 300 miles, then it's not going to be a big issue. And I think a lot of people say, okay, I give. I'm willing to give up my exhaust-spewing vehicle. But then you're always going to have something that has to be towed. Now, Tesla has come out with another company, I can't remember the name of it, has come out with a over-the-road tractor that will pull, all of these containers that you see being pulled by diesel exhaust spewing vehicles, and that will be electric. But the problem, is just use so much more energy. And if you hook up a trailer like my 34-foot travel trailer, for example, to an electric F-150, I don't think the range is going to be very good. So I think we're going to need some type of a hybrid arrangement, maybe with bigger batteries that will go electric longer than the little batteries that they use right now. I've enjoyed my hybrid F-150. I mean, it'll get 24 miles to the gallon in the city, 24 on the highway. It pulls my trailer with ease, although the gas mileage drops significantly. Anybody tells you that they don't drop when you hook them up to a trailer, they are fooling you or trying to. I mean, it'll get anywhere from 10 to 12 miles to the gallon, which is not real good when I'm pulling my trailer. But, how often am I pulling my trailer? Not very often. If I was going on a cross-country trip, I wouldn't buy an F-150 anyway. I'd buy an F-250 so I could use the diesel engine. They cost about the same now as this Power Boost. My Power Boost truck with the Lariat trim package and the massaging seats and heated this and that, it was $75,000 retail, and you can buy a diesel F-250 a lot less than that if you don't get one with a lot of goodies on it. But these are all considerations that all of us are going to have to make. You may be in a situation where you're ready to buy a vehicle, and you're going to ask your kids or other people that you trust their opinion. So what do you think I ought to do? You know, I'm wanting to buy a passenger car or a little crossover type. You know, maybe you're considering a, I don't know, Ford Edge or a Toyota Highlander, maybe a Honda Pilot, something like that. And you're thinking, you know, I'm getting ready to buy that thing. And all this talk in the news about EVs, just ignore it. Because it's your internal combustion engine is going to be fine. Maybe 10 years from now, you know, maybe 8 years from now, you will see more and more electrics. And I'm sure that balance is going to switch over to the electric side. But, you know, for now, just go buy your Honda Pilot and be happy. Maybe they make a hybrid version of that. I don't know. You know, is it worth paying the extra, you know, to get the hybrid? I know on the F-150, it's $2,500 to get the power boost. But now the advantage of that power boost is the fact that I can power my house with it. You know, it's a lot of the hybrids, you can't do anything like that. So, you know, I kind of saw this as a dual benefit. You know, I get better fuel economy. And then if, you know, we have a terrible snowstorm and it knocks out power, then I can just plug it into my truck and I can run for anywhere from 45 to 60 hours on a full tank of gas. And then when I run out of juice or run low on gas, I go to the gas station, fill up, come back, and power my house for another 60 hours. That's comforting. You know, and you don't have to go out and buy an expensive generator. So haven't I eased your mind today? Doesn't it make you just want to run out and spend $75,000 on an F-150 power boost? Maybe not. We'll take our first break and be back here in just a second. Okay, I'm back. You know, one of the things that may put you over the hump as far as an electric vehicle will be that the government paying you off to buy one. I don't know exactly how this is going to happen, but I know that it will involve a tax credit that you will get if you buy an EV. And I know they have restored the tax credits, I believe, on Tesla. And they're talking about adding an additional anywhere from $9,000 to $12,000 to get you to help offset the cost of the extra cost of the EV. But boy, cars have gotten expensive. There is no doubt. Of course, a lot of stuff has. I remember probably 20 years ago, you could buy a really nice small economy car, you know, for right around $10,000, sometimes a little bit less than that. And now, I mean, you're looking at just for a basic car, you're looking at anywhere from $18,000 to $23,000. But cars have got so much more technology in them. And that's one of the reasons we had the big chip shortage as well. I mean, it's just too much demand for too few chips. I want to explain a little bit about that. And there are basically two different types of computer chips. There's really more than that, but I'm talking in broad strokes here, okay? One of the most modern chips of today that you're seeing in like iPhones and really sophisticated pieces of equipment, and then you have what they call legacy chips, and the legacy chips are chips that have been out there for anywhere from 10 to 15 years, and there are still people out there that make them. But they have shifted a lot of their capacity over to the more modern ones. Now, when I say modern, what I mean is that they're smaller and they have more capacity. They can do more things. They can process information faster, these little teeny computer chips. So, you know, a legacy chip is bigger. It can't process quite as much information, but it is about 90% of what goes into today's cars. And so we need more. They shut down a lot of these plants, and the plants shifted over to the more modern chips, and now not enough people are making the legacy chips. And from all, what I understand is that the companies that make the chips don't want to invest in, you know, billions and billions of dollars into new plants to make old chips. I mean, that makes sense to me, doesn't it to you? So basically, the automakers are going to have to up their game in order to solve a lot of this problem. It's not just about making more chips. The chips are out there. It's just that the automakers can't use them because they're too sophisticated. You know, if you look at some of the infotainment systems that are in cars today, you know, you look at the dash. When I say infotainment, it's that big screen, okay, and it's what controls a lot of different things on your car. Those things are still just a little bit archaic. They are not up to iPhone level or Android level. They are slower. You know, the Ford Sync system was awful when it first came out. You know, back in 05, 06, they had Sync. That's S-Y-N-C. That's what they called it. They should have called it Out of Sync, because you would have to touch the touch-sensitive screen like three times to get it to respond. And it's way better than that. I mean, the new system is light years ahead, but they're not using a lot of the modern technology. So the auto industry has to catch up, and they are. They're working hard on that right now. And you're seeing larger and larger screens, more faster processing than we've ever seen before. I mean, just instantaneous recognition of a touch on a screen. And that's a lot of that has to do with the improvements. But there are so many other things that still use the legacy chips that they just got to stop it. And they got to start building more modern designs into their electronic circuitry. But the bad side to that is it costs more. That's right. It costs more to design it. It costs more to build it. Those chips are more expensive. So here we go. Inflation. Maybe Joe Biden will fix that for us. You know, I don't know if there is a fix for it. I think things are just going to have to settle out. All of these shortages of all these components. It's not just chips. It's just about everything. I was at a retail store the other day, and it just, you know, they have about half the inventory that I would expect just before Christmas. And I talked to the owner, and he said, you know, we just can't get stuff. And it's just everything. So anyway, I hope it doesn't ruin your Christmas. You know, we probably have enough stuff. We don't need a lot of presents anyway. Let's just get together and enjoy each other. That's what we need to do. Okay, what else is going on here in the auto industry? Oh, yeah, Elon Musk. He was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. I guess it makes sense from the success of Tesla and all his other ventures that he's got going on. He solidified his standing as the world's richest person, and turned his little electric vehicle startup company into a $1 trillion company. So, according to Time, they said that few individuals had more influence than Musk on life and on Earth, and potentially life off Earth as well. See, he's... Oh, what a nice picture. You know, this guy is an innovator. And he has been able to pull off a remarkable, it's either a remarkable charade or just a remarkable feat. SpaceX, you know, his other major company, has become the go-to provider of launch services for customers such as NASA. Yeah. You know, not many people in the history of man can claim that they did as many diverse things as he did in terms of the overall impact. Well, is that fair to say, though? I mean, did he do more than Thomas Edison? I don't think so. It's just that, you know, how many people are in charge of a car company and a space company? That's just pretty bizarre. But this guy is definitely changing the world in more ways than one. I do have a recommendation. If you are thinking about that you might want an electric car in a few years, or you might want to try a hybrid now, I would seriously think about leasing it instead of buying it. The reason I say that is that nobody knows what this market's going to do. And when you lease a car, you're not locked in. And sometimes folks say, well, I don't want to make monthly payments. We'll do a single payment lease option then. Because just about every manufacturer or every finance company will offer you something called a single payment lease. So if you, let's say that the car you're wanting to buy is an MSRP of $40,000, and you can either lease it for $500 a month for 2 years, or you can pay a flat payment that's equivalent to the $500 a month for 2 years. And so, and you'll probably get a little bit of a discount if you do that. So then, you know, you still turn in the car 2 years from now, but you don't have to make monthly payments. It's like paying cash for the use of a car for 2 years. And it works for a lot of people. And then you know, within 2 years, we'll have a lot more sorted out as far as electric vehicles are concerned. We will really see whether this infrastructure is really going to be built out, and whether we're going to have, you know, faster charging available. You know, there may be that they come up with some new battery technology that is getting ready to be introduced. So I think the next two or three years are really going to say a lot. Might be a good idea, instead of investing in a car, let's say you buy a car that falls out of favor, and then 3 years from now you want to jump on the EV bandwagon, and all of a sudden your car isn't worth very much. That might be a good way to handle that, because when you lease a car, the value of that car, it's not your problem at the end of 2 or 3 years. It's the leasing company. That's on them. They're hoping that that car will be worth what they thought it was when you took out the lease. If it's worth less, they lose money. If it's worth more, they make money. And in some cases, people will buy the car at the end of the lease. So that's just something you need to think about. We'll take our last break and be back here in just a second. Well, thank you again for listening to this edition of My Car Guru. You can listen online at iHeartRadio. Just look up WJCW, and there it is. The commercials are different, so you know, you'll get some different breaks and stuff, but you can still listen to most of the show, or just listen on this radio station like you do, or you can get in touch with me if you need me. Cell phone is 423-552-2020, or send me an email to LennyLawson2020@gmail.com, and I'll answer your car questions, even the hard ones. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.